This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Daly. Our guest this week is House Agriculture Committee Ranking Member Angie Craig. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Minnesota Congresswoman Angie Craig next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 560 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Before the framework release of the House Farm and Family Relief Act last week by House Democrats, Agriculture Committee Ranking Member Angie Craig spoke with AgriPulse on the sidelines of the American Farm Bureau Convention in Anaheim. The Minnesota Democrat shared grave concerns about the ICE conflicts in her home state.
Well, Minnesota is hurting right now. It really is. I mean, our citizens feel like we're being targeted by the Trump administration for political retribution and reasons. And so that just creates a very difficult situation across a number of different communities. You know, I got a text from one of my local farmers saying, you know, ICE is sitting outside a dairy farm. And folks, you know, regardless of their citizenship status, don't want to come to work. We're getting reports of, you know, ICE pulling over American citizens who are brown. Look, over 40% of farm workers in this country are undocumented workers. And farmers know these are some of the hardest working, best human beings in our country. And so, you know, I think people are really upset. This administration said, and we agree, we got to have secure borders. This administration said we want to make sure people who are here, who are undocumented, you know, are not criminals, have obeyed the law. But this isn't what Minnesotans ask for, this kind of situation where now the Department of Homeland Security is proposing 3,000 ICE officers in Minnesota. Minneapolis only has 600 peace officers on its force. So, you know, it's really become a very difficult environment, you know. And, you know, there, Renee Good, the woman who was shot and killed by ICE agents, a lot of people, including myself, do not believe that that situation unfolded the way that it should. Peace officers, whether you're federal, state, local, escalation of a situation is not the objective. It's de-escalation.
So to roll that to a bigger issue to agriculture, Bob Stallman, the former president of Farm Bureau, said we're either going to import our food or we're going to import workers.
Yeah.
It won't be one or the other. There is a labor situation in the country, and with so many undocumented workers, the cat's already out of the bag. So how, in a midterm election year, partisanship as heavy as it is, how do you address this issue, if not the sum, at least the portion that would allow agriculture to flourish?
Look, I've been a strong supporter of immigration reform as it relates to the farm economy and farm workers. From the Farm Modernization Act, which, you know, I know wasn't a perfect bill, to reforms of the H-2A program. But I would ask the question, with ICE behaving the way that it is in a place like Minnesota right now, what kind of immigrant is going to want to come to the United States and work anymore? I think that is going to be a big challenge for us, is the behavior of the current Trump administration isn't we want criminals out of our country. It's we don't want immigrants in our country. And I'm not sure we aren't really changing the face of our opportunity for immigration, even if we do expand the number of legal immigrants in the farm economy across America.
You had the opportunity earlier in the week to be in Anaheim, California, and among the nation's farmers and ranchers. And one of the items that was most notably stated is that this farm economy is very difficult. One Farm Bureau president from the South said he felt like they could lose a third of their farmers. Now, there is bridge assistance that's coming. Do you feel it's adequate? And with Congress working so hard on budget reconciliation, how do you now address a need in agriculture that is consequential?
Well, you're talking to a woman whose grandfather lost his job in the 1980s farm crisis. He was a farm foreman, and he lost it when the farmer lost the farm. We are seeing bankruptcy skyrocket already in my home state. We're seeing mental health issues and the rise of completed suicide in my state. It is very tough out there. And the question of how do we address this, you know, it's one of the reasons why I thought we needed a 5-year 12 title farm bill. When you put $68 billion into reconciliation, and now the administration has sent $12 billion in farm relief, you know, it's really hard now to go make the case that farmers need more assistance, and yet we know that there were extreme winners and losers in this initial farm relief package. Regardless of all of that, farmers and families both need relief from the high costs that we've got for farmers and families, high input costs, to the trade war that continues. And I'll be honest, it's we're going to be right back where we are today, 1 year from now, unless the administration figures out, you know, how to go create new markets, both internationally with countries and also domestically. So, you know, it's a rough time. I get it. I don't want to just sit here and rail on the administration because there are strategic times when tariffs are useful. But right now, high input cost, low commodities prices, a global trade war, no new market expansion, and our farm workforce is literally under attack by our own Department of Homeland Security, as well as many other sectors and communities.
In December, Senator Grassley from Iowa said that there are still things the administration could do. And he obviously mentioned the tariff. But with the Treasury Department and the tax regulations that are on 45Z and others, there's things Treasury could do to create local demand. There's things EPA could do to create renewable fuel demand. And Congress perhaps could pass E15, which would create demand where agriculture could once again pull itself up by its bootstraps.
Well, that's what farmers want. I know that. They want those markets. They don't want more aid. We might need to do some in the short term. I think we will need to do more in the short term. But if the administration wants to work with us, I want to expand markets like year-round E15. We were so close at the end of the year last year, and Elon Musk kind of screwed that up for us. These appropriations bills are the best chance, opportunity to get year-round E15. But you're exactly right. We shouldn't stop there, right? Higher blends of ethanol, opportunity for renewable fuels, for sustainable aviation fuels, for all kinds of new markets. And we've got to go after them if we want to help save the family farmer and the family farm, because we know that if we start seeing a third of farmers go out of business, it's not just one family, it's an entire rural community that suffers. Next thing you know, you're going to see the rural hospitals going, you're going to see the rural schools going, and we are a nation in decline in rural America. So no one wants to see that happen, but, you know, look, I call the balls and strikes. I always have, both with the Biden administration as well as the Trump administration. A lot of what is happening right now is self-inflicted wounds by the Trump administration.
So in H.R. 1, there were a number of reforms that would bring reference prices and others closer to the economic scale that farms are operating in today. Still not perfect, but certainly better. Credit wasn't included, and I know that for many, especially young producers, when they're trying to get operating loans, the Farm Service Agency's guaranteed loan program was an option for them to work with lenders. That wasn't updated. That system is still not updated. And with regard to that, what does it take to get it done?
Well, that's exactly right. Farm credit and rural development were two major areas left out of the reconciliation process because those are policy changes, not budget issues. And so we continue to work together, Republicans and Democrats, to try to get a skinny farm bill across the finish line. Senator Bozeman over on the Senate side has been more clear about he doesn't want to see any poison pills put into a farm bill over in the Senate. I would say that I hope my Republican colleagues in the House would consider the same approach. If you start throwing incredibly controversial items, I'm going to call one out because it's more of a bipartisan problem these days than anything, and it's preemption for pesticides. You know, it's going to be very difficult to get many, if any, Democrats to support a skinny farm bill if preemption for pesticides is included inside that bill. It's a red line for a lot of us. And at the same time, a bunch of my Republican colleagues, because of, you know, the Make America Healthy Again movement among, you know, a lot of moms across this country, they also feel the pressure around pesticides in our food supply chain. So I know that this is a challenge for our nation's farmers, but you know, if we Republicans are going to need Democrats to get a skinny farm bill across the finish line, because I know a lot of my Republican colleagues actually don't understand why we need to do a skinny farm bill. When we did reconciliation, when we extended the last farm bill by 1 year, when we've done the farm relief, there's some real skepticism that Congress needs to do anything right now. And I still wonder House Republicans have the support of their leadership to get this bill, even if it comes through the committee to the House floor for a vote. We got it through the committee last session. It never came to a vote on the House floor. And even if it gets a vote, is the Trump administration prioritizing it either? Or do they believe they've really done what they need to do already?
So let's play political chess, not checkers. If you read the political pundits and if you look at history, midterm elections traditionally bring change. So if you happen to be sitting on what is now the minority side of the aisle with an idea that after the midterm, you'll have the chance to control the committees, would you be more apt to want to hold off on that legislation until you could have more of a guiding principle of the elements that need to be included? And we might need to say health care and nutrition.
Well, at the end of the day, Republicans should keep that in mind. They should keep in mind that if history bears true, Democrats will take back the U.S. House of Representatives and will hold the gavel in the next Congress, which means you're going to need to compromise and negotiate with us now if you want to get something across the finish line. And I think, you know, I think my colleagues are smart in that way. You know, it is a very slim majority already in the House of Representatives by my Republican colleagues, 2 or 3 votes. You can't get all Republicans to agree on anything these days. So you need Democrats to get these things across the finish line. But in order to get us, you've got to be a good partner. You've got to negotiate. You got to give up a few things that, you know, we want. When I say farm and family relief, what I can tell you is that the National Governors Association is very concerned about the timeline of the cost shift to states for the SNAP program. That is putting a significant burden on Republican and Democratic states alike. So that might be something that we'd be willing to negotiate on.
Are you concerned that the administration is not looking at the hunger situation in the country, not giving that evaluation? Where do we get an accurate number if Washington doesn't do that?
I don't think that they are prioritizing hunger in our country. And look, I mean, you know, who the hell do you think we buy the food from to feed the hungry Americans who need our help. It's from this nation's family farmers. You know, I talked about when in the Big Beautiful Bill, Republicans cut $186 billion to the SNAP program, the fact that that was $25 billion in direct revenue to family farmers that they were cutting. And that we can't think about the SNAP program, which I know many of you know this, but it offers $6.20 a day to help our neighbors. And 70% of the folks who are on that program are children, they're seniors, they're the disabled, they're this nation's veterans. You know, when they made those cuts to that program, it affects an entire supply chain. It's not just hungry people. It's the farmers who grow the food. It's the truck drivers who drive it to the grocery store. It's the small rural grocery stores and the large grocery stores. It's the clerks who put it on the shelves. I don't think that this administration is prioritizing hunger in our country. And at the end of the day, you know, in the last budget showdown, they actually denied sending out SNAP dollars to the state. So, in fact, it sure feels some days like they're using hunger as a political tool to get what they want, which, frankly, is kind of disgusting.
If we were having the conversation with the ranking member of the House Agriculture Committee, and we are, and you were sitting, and Mr. Thompson, the chair, was sitting here, then what are some of those items, that 1, 2, 3, 4, that, you know, it'd be good if we could compromise on this now, we'd be more inclined to support that skinny farm bill.
Yeah, let's get a skinny farm bill, and let's not put a lot of the controversial measures in it. You know, if Republicans want to totally preempt pesticides, you know, introduce a bill and get it done. If you want, it's not in our jurisdiction, but if we want farm worker immigration reform, let's introduce those bills and let's get it done. You know, I've got a lot of people now on both sides of this Prop 12 issue. You know, we're sitting here in California, which is, of course, what we're talking about with Prop 12. And there's a lot of hog farmers out there who spent a whole lot of money to be able to comply with Prop 12. And so Republicans and Democrats are both, you know, getting advocates from each side of this issue on the topic. So, you know, we got to work our way through the dicey topics, but, you know, let's just get the non-controversial things done and then we'll fight. Don't put it in a bill that is going to peel off, a group of Republicans or a group of Democrats not to support it.
So you brought that up, and let's title this next conversation the Commerce Clause, because Proposition 12 arrives you at Commerce Clause. Does one state have the right? You also have different states now that are setting a patchwork of what food labels need to be. No way the food industry can have 50 different labels in 50 different states. There's even state laws now that are being set toward packages of the packages the food comes in and the recycling standards that go. And those are all state versus state as opposed to national standard. And all of this pertains to agriculture.
Well, that's why I've been a strong proponent of, you know, let's sit down and actually find a middle ground that we're probably all not going to be 100% happy with. This patchwork of state laws, that's not going to work either. But the folks who've made the investment to be able to comply with a law like Prop 12, you know, they want the reward of that too.
I want to move to trade, but before I do, I feel an opportunity to ask you about the loss of an individual on the Agriculture Committee, a rice farmer from California, Mr. LaMalfa. I don't find many people that have anything bad to say about him, a genuine servant for agriculture and a voice for agriculture.
You're not going to find me saying anything bad about Doug. I'm going to miss him. I mean, he was one of the nicest, most passionate people on behalf of farmers in this country, and just genuinely a nice man, a good man. You know, he and I didn't always agree. It's okay, you know. But in Congress, you know, there's performative, and then there's people who are just there to try to get the work done on behalf of their constituents. Mr. LaMalfa was definitely one of those.
A statesman, as I would recall. So let's not talk about the whole area of trade, but USMCA is up for review, and USTR has had a number of hearings, and people commented. What would be your checklist of things that should be there for USMCA?
Well, look, these are two of America's, American farmers' most important markets. And, you know, I was right in the middle of the last negotiation on USMCA. And, you know, I would just say let's treat our trading partners respectfully in this process. The administration, you know, it's one thing to sort of piss off enemies like China, but it's kind of another when you go around pissing off your friends. And it feels an awful lot like, you know, we're not a trustworthy trading partner at the moment. And so I would just say the most important thing in this agreement is to go into it as a country understanding that these are our friends. We need them. They need us from a trade perspective, particularly in agriculture. And, you know, let's be good actors here in this process.
Last question before we close. The plate is gone. The pyramid's back. It's turned upside down. There is a favor for whole foods. There is a favor for protein. There's still question about sugar, and there's still question about vegetable oils. There's question about processing. What does the ranking member think of the DGAs?
Well, look, we turned the pyramid upside down. You know, I have to say I'm not sure the whole thing was done on the best scientific research available to us. And, look, I've been on every high-protein diet you've ever seen in the world as a woman in America. And I've always advocated for whole milk in our in healthy in our schools. So, look, I kind of like it, but I don't think it's based on science. And I do think we need to think very carefully about the role that vegetables play in our diet. And look, I love a good steak, but I probably shouldn't eat one every night. And I just wish that our nation's health professionals were looking at the science a little more forcefully here.
You have a lot on your plate now yourself, and certainly a busy week as you started off in California meeting with farmers and then took time to visit with us here on the sidelines of the Farm Bureau Convention. A stalwart for agriculture and one who stands up for her side of the aisle. Thank you sincerely for being here and being a part of this program. The Congresswoman gets the last word today.
Well, my last word is just this. I've never met a tougher, more resilient group of people in life than this nation's family farmers. And so my message is just, you know, take care of each other. I'm seeing an awful lot of mental health challenges out there. Let's be there for one another, and we'll keep working for you.
Our thanks to House Agriculture Committee Ranking Member Angie Craig, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.